Hare Krishna Nam Hari Bole Kino Hare Krishna Nam Hari Bole
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Song by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is a song called Keno Hare Krishna Naam. And this means, oh why, while chanting Hare Krishna. Keno Hare Krishna Naam Hari Bole Mano Pran Kande Na. Oh why does my heart not weep from chanting the holy names Hare Krishna? Pakki na jani kon aparadhe Muke Hare Krishna Naam Bolo Na. The bird of my heart does not know what past sinful activities it has committed to cause this inability to chant Hare Krishna properly. It's a very nice example. Bird of the heart. This is found in Srimad Bhagavatam. This is found in the Upanishads also. It's a very, shall we say, standard example. And that compares the body to a tree. And within this tree there is the individual soul, who is one bird, and there is the Paramatma, who is another bird. The difference between the two is that the bird Paramatma, he's called Sakshi, which means he's witnessing only the activities of the Jiva bird. And the Jiva bird, he thinks he's an enjoyer. So in this tree, there are fruits. There are sweet fruits. There are also sour fruits. This is what Krishna calls in the Bhagavad Gita, dvandva moha, the illusion of duality. Sukha dukkha. There is suffering. There is happiness in this world. So this individual soul bird, jiva bird, he's very busy jumping about in the tree, tasting these different fruits. In this way, he loses his consciousness of his relationship with the Paramatma, who is always with him, and he even loses consciousness of himself as being different from this tree of the body. So, in the course of his hopping from here to there, he's committing many sins. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is lamenting that the bird of my heart has been engaged in sinful activities for so long that he does not know how to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra properly. You see, when we speak of chanting Hare Krishna properly, what is the essence? When I was in Odessa last summer, and Sri Prahladananda Maharaj made a nice point in a talk he was giving from the stage. We were all on the stage addressing the devotees, some 1,500 devotees were there. And each of us was speaking something to kind of encapsulate Krishna consciousness in short form. So he made a very nice point that Prabhupada always used to say, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So that's actually the essence of what it means to chant Hare Krishna properly. Just like in that song by Lochan Das Thakur. Rise rase majia mukhe bolo hari hari. So vishaya chadiya se rase majia mukhe bole hari hari. Vishaya means sense objects, just like the fruits of the tree, vishaya. So Lochan Das Thakur is asking everyone to give up that taste for vishaya, for sense gratification. Then Serase Madhya Mukhe Bole Holi. Then when you chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you'll experience that bliss, that rasa, which is promised. So this was Srila Prabhupada's, we can say, sutra. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. It sounds very simple, but it's like, you know, Einstein's formula, E equals MC squared. Very simple to write. You see on the board, a few letters, number, you see. Anyone can learn this in 30 seconds, but then what does it mean? That is volumes and volumes of books to explain the actual meaning of this simple-looking equation. So similarly, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Yes, it is simple, but as Prabhupada would say, for the simple. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, Vaishnava Sharalata Artha, which means the essence of being a Vaishnava is Sharalata. This word is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, means simplicity. And simplicity, we don't mean simple in the sense of someone who is, you know, simple-minded in the sense of being a little foolish, a little dull, a little childish. But it just means straightforward. You see? Like if we say, here is starting point and here is goal. Starting point, goal. Then what's the simplest way to get from starting point? It's a straight line. You see? And that's your shortest distance. And then there is another word, kapadya. Kapaditva, which means complex or crooked. So someone thinks, from here to here, let me go this side, that side, back here, mm-hmm. See, jump over, mm-hmm. You see. And that takes longer, and there's a danger of getting lost, you make it so complicated. So the essence of Vaishnavism is simplicity, meaning straightforward, honesty, not speculating something. Because always this tendency to speculate, make things complicated, is wrapped up with pride. You see? When Yamaraj in Mahabharata asked Maharaj Yudhisthira, he asked him several questions. And one of the questions was, what is pride? And Yudhisthira's correct answer was independence. So someone who thinks that he can arrive at the truth, the goal of life, proper understanding of things, by some independent means, you see, charting out his own unique direction, he's doing that because of pride. He's puffed up. There everything has been laid out. Shastra Sadhu Guru has given a clear path, but he's thinking, what does he think? Oh, this is too simple. That's how they talk. This is too simple. I have to jazz it up a bit with my own, you see, intellectual speculation. Now, this is due to pride only. And then, you see, pratishta. Pratishta means this display of oneself as being very special. So pratishta. And pratishta is a fault which leads to so many other problems in spiritual life. So pratishta means he's proud of being a Vaishnava to begin with, which is a contradiction, because Vaishnava is supposed to be the most humble, but for him to be a Vaishnava means to be proud. And then he's proud of his particular realizations and explanations and all these special things he does. So this makes the process very complicated. So, this is all, yes, going back to one thing. A lack of real taste for chanting Hare Krishna. One is chanting Hare Krishna, but one is not happy actually. Because if he was happy, then he would not resort to all this mental speculation and adding and subtracting, whatever, this alteration of the process. He's not feeling satisfaction. So, Vishayachadiya, give up that taste. This is what Lochan Das Thakur is saying. Se rase moje mukhe bole hori hori. Then when you chant hori hori, holy name of the Lord, then the rasa will come. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is lamenting that the bird of my heart does not know what past sinful activities he's done to cause this inability to chant Hare Krishna properly. There's no taste. So then he addresses that bird, his soul. Oh, forest bird, baner paki, means bird of the forest. I have kept something for you very carefully within the cottage of my heart, the holy name of Lord Hari, which is overflowing with pure sweet honey. Oh, bird, you could learn the chanting of this name if you were taught. A bird is easily able to speak all names. Why then does this bird of my heart refuse to chant Hare Krishna? Or why does my heart not weep from chanting the holy names Hare Krishna? O bird, come, let us go to the spiritual world, the land of true and everlasting beauty. It is a place where the imaginary man of my mind, this is very interesting, the term in Bengali, manir manush. So manir means mind, and manush, manusha, human being, person. So the indication here is that all of us, this is psychological, nice psychology, all of us have a conception of ourself. You see, inside of ourself we have an idea of who we are. Now, whether or not others agree to that self-image we have, we're very attached to that image. And when others are contradicting that image, we think that they're foolish. They don't see the real glorious person. Of course, yes, the pure living entity is glorious, but this manir manush means not that, it means something created in the mind. And so this manir manush, our self-conception, is always looking for happiness. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that, yes, you can find this happiness. You can find this, but that happiness is to be attained when the cycle of birth and death stops. So, jedeshit manya manush asa jauya nai. This place where the imaginary man of my mind will never again come and go on the revolving cycle of birth and death. O bird, at the time of death, your body will simply be placed upon a funeral stretcher, lifted on the shoulders of four persons, and carried to the cremation grounds. Alas, the cremation fire will then enter your mouth and totally consume your tongue. There will be nothing you can do to save yourself, for at that time it is too late. You will be unable to speak anymore. So this is a nice introduction to the theme that I wanted to speak on today, and probably for the 4 days up to Gaur Purnima when we'll be meeting here and talking, discussing. So from Srimad Bhagavatam, I wanted to look at the subject of death. This song we've heard, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is warning the bird that now in life you have this chance to chant Hare Krishna. If you don't become serious about it, and then when you die, the possibility to chant is finished. And your tongue will be set aflame. They always set the fire in the Hindu cremation, they put the fire in the mouth first. So the tongue will burn up and no possibility of chanting. Krishna says something very similar in the Gita. Shaknodi haivaya shosham, prakshavish sharira vimokshana, kama krodha bhavam begam, Sayukta Sasukhi Naraha. In this verse in the 5th chapter, he's saying that we have, up until the time, prak sharira vimokshana, up to the time when we have to give up this sharira, means this body, vimokshana, give up. So this is the time we have from this very moment now, we're sitting here, till that unknown point when we have to give up that body. We have that much time to accomplish something. What is that? Kama krodha bhavat vegam. So vegam means passion. Or Prabhupada used to translate pushing agents. So there are six vegam, like the mind pushes us. Words, we're pushed to speak words, sometimes sweet words, sometimes harsh words. We're pushed to speak, to make sounds. Anger pushes us. The tongue, with its desires to taste. The tongue also wants to speak, but also it desires to taste nice foods. That's another pushing agent. The food goes down to the belly, and then the belly distributes the nourishment to the whole body. So the belly is another pushing agent, fill me up. And then a sexual urge. So in this way, Chaya Bega, this is from one song in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, six kinds of pushing agents are there. So Bega, this is mentioned. Kama Krodha Bhavat Vegam. So these pushing agents, they're working in two ways. Kam Krodh. Kam means lustful desire, and Krodh means frustration, anger, when the lust cannot be satisfied or is too much satisfied, then we become frustrated. So these are two sides. Kam, hankering, Krodh, frustration. So Lord Krishna is saying all that we have to rid our consciousness of. And that's what this human life is meant for. Kama Krodha Bhavat Vegam. And when we have crossed over Kam, Krodha and Vegam, then Sayukta, then one is connected to me. This is Krishna consciousness. And Sasuki Nara, among men, that person who is linked to me is happy, is satisfied. So this depiction of death is that it is the end of a test. There is a period, this human form of life, in which we are tested to see if we can cross over the weaknesses of the body, the materialistic body and mind, and come to the secure point, secure position, yukta, yoga, being fixed up, linked to Krishna in devotional service. So death is the, you can say, the examination. It's like one takes a course, learns, practices, and then there's an examination. How well you have absorbed this. This is death. So I wanted wanted us all to see in the Bhagavatam the way great authorities like Lord Kapila Dev are explaining death. So here's some verses. From Canto 3, Chapter 31, we begin with verse 43. Dehena jiva bhutena loka lokam anuvrajam bunjana eva karmani kruti aviratam puman. Due to his particular type of body, the materialistic living entity wanders from one planet to another, following fruitive activities. In this way, he involves himself in fruitive activities and enjoys the result incessantly. This we've already discussed. The living entity in this body, this is his weakness. This is his weakness. To turn away from the real purpose of this human form of life and involve himself in the sense pleasures that are also available in this body. So, the result is jivohi asyanugo deho bhutendriya manomaya tanirodosya maranam. Marana means death. Avirbhavastu sambhava. In this way, the living entity gets a suitable body with material mind and senses according to his fruitive activities. When the reaction of his particular activity comes to an end, that end is called death. And when a particular type of reaction begins, that beginning is called birth. And then Lord Kapila Dev, he explains this with examples. Dravyo paladabhi stanasya dravyeksha yogata yada tan panchatvam aham manat Patir Dravya Darshanam Yatakshnor Dravya vayava darshana yogata yada tattaiva chakshusha drashtu drastitva yogatan nayoho.
When the eyes lose their power to see color or form due to morbid affliction of the optic nerve, the sense of sight becomes deadened. The living entity, who is the seer of both the eyes and the sight, loses his power of vision. In the same way, when the physical body, the place where perceptions of objects occurs, is rendered incapable of perceiving, that is known as death. When one begins to view the physical body as one's very self, that is called birth. A very nice explanation. And a very nice example. You see, when there is some disturbance, some disease of the optic nerve, then we lose the power of sight. And then we are called what? Blind. So when that happens to every sense, it's called death. If you just lose your sense of sight, that's called blindness. But if you lose all sensory power, we have two divisions of senses, the knowledge acquiring jnanindriyas, like the eye, to see. And then there's the karmendriya, those senses that work, like the hand which picks things up, or the legs which walk. So two divisions of five senses, two groups of five senses, or ten senses in all. When they all lose their power, that's called death. And then when that power returns to us, as that power is coming back to us, which means within the womb of our next mother, and the body is being formed there, and gradually the senses are coming out, we again can hear and see and smell and taste and touch and so on, then that's called birth. So then going on, tasman na karya santra so na karpanyam na sambrama buddha jiva gatim dhiro mukta sangas chirediha. Therefore, this is very important, therefore one should not view death with horror, nor have recourse to defining the body as soul, nor give way to exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. Realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should move about in the world free from attachment and steadfast in purpose. So, Kapila Dev is very, very interesting. What he's pointing out here is that there are three ways that people deal with the problem of death while in material consciousness. Some of them view death with horror. Now, this is, in European culture, this is the basic attitude towards death. European culture goes back to the ancient Greeks. They always say that European culture, philosophy, all begins with the Greeks, the European worldview. So, in ancient Greece, there was an official religion. And this religion is the subject matter of poems in Greek language by poets. There was Hesiod was one, and another one was Homer. Homer wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey. So in a work called the Odyssey, which is about the travels of Ulysses, the hero Ulysses, after the war at Troy, the Trojan War, he had to go home, and he had a whole adventure getting home. So he met the ghost of another hero called Achilles. And so Achilles told him that, because Ulysses was asking him about death, speaking about death with him. And Achilles said, it is better that you stay in this world, in this body, even if it means you are, the word is enthralled. Enthralled in the English language means to be in a kind of slave state, slavery. It also means to be in great illusion. So this is the idea. What he's saying is better to be in Maya. Better to be under the control of material energy, thinking you're in the, you know, thinking you're the body, all of that. And at least live in this nice world. Then it's better that than to be the king of the ghosts. So this is this point here, that death is horrible. So this was the view going back to ancient Greece. Cling to life. Just like Shakespeare also, there's this line. I don't know if Shakespeare or some other poet. Anyways, there's this line, rage, rage against the dying of the light. You see, it's when death comes, you should be angry, you should be shaking your fist. Go away, don't come here. Leave me alone, let me live. Because death is horrible. So this is a very predominant attitude. Then also he says, define the body as soul. This is another thing they do. And give exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. So these are ways that people cling to this life. They think the body is the soul. And so when death comes, very horrible. Soul is gone. Soul is not existing anymore. That person has ceased to be. And they think that the way to keep death away is to enjoy life as much as possible. So Lord Kapila Dev is saying these are very bad policies. One should realize the true nature of the living entity and move about in the world. Yes, you're here in the world. So one does not have to be afraid. One can move in this world, but free from attachment and be fixed in one's purpose, one's spiritual purpose. So one should be mukta sangha, means free. Sangha means attachment. So we find another well-known verse. This is spoken by Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Dehapatya kalatradeshu atmasaineshu vasatsu vipi tesham pramato nidhanam parshanapi na parshati. That people don't know the purpose of life. Atma tattva, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport. Persons devoid of atma tattva, knowledge of the self and spirit soul. That is our purpose, to realize this, atma tattva. But they don't have it, and they do not inquire into how to get it. They do not inquire into how to solve the problems of life. Why is that? Atma saineshu vasatsuvapi, because they are too much attached to fallible soldiers. Prabhupada uses this. Atma saineshu, this is his translation. Now one thinks one is protected by the facility for sense gratification. He has a nice house. He has nice bank balance, he has a nice car in the garage, he has a nice job. He has family members, wife, children, other relatives. He has friends, the countrymen. So all of these are like soldiers or guards around him, you see? And he thinks that they're very strong, and they have big machine guns, and they're very alert. And the enemy will come, they completely drive them off, kill them, chase them away. But no, atma saineshu means they are fallible soldiers. Asat. Asat means, yes, not real. There's no real protection. So, then, tesham pramataro nidhanam parshanapi na parshati. The thing is, parshati. Everyone can see. Throughout history, there have been powerful, so-called powerful people, wealthy people, famous people, who have assembled very elaborately this type of protection system around themselves, but they've all died. All throughout history. Who has been successful? and staving off death by some materialistic process. And we can see this. But napashiti, people still don't see it. Sufficient lesson is there that this doesn't work. But when it's their turn, you see, when they're up to bat, then they take the same. They take the same policy. So pashyanapi na pashyati. They see, but they don't see. It's plain as day, but still they don't see it. And this is called pramata. Pramata probably translates here too attached, but otherwise pramata also means mad. They become mad. They're not thinking properly. They're not thinking clearly. They're not thinking logically anymore. And that is due to attachment. You see? So this attachment is our great enemy. It's not death, actually. People think that death is the great enemy, the great problem, but it actually is not. The great problem is attachment. Because in fact, we are not this body. So the body, you see, is something, it's just like this. This is a lump of matter sitting here, and this is a lump of matter sitting here. You see? So if this crumbles for some reason, with the bricks, you know, there's suddenly cracks and the whole thing crumbles into dust. Well, you know, we'll look and say, wow, that was very strange. But it doesn't personally affect us. But if this crumbles, this lump, sitting next to that lump, then because I'm attached to it, then, oh, what horrible thing is happening? Get a doctor! Help! If this crumbles, no one is rushing to the telephone. Bring a doctor! This stone pillar is crumbling. Something must be done. Ambulance. No, because we're not attached to this. You see? So the real problem is attachment. Because anything material has to crumble in time. This is inevitable. This is inevitable. It can't be changed. It's just the law of nature. So actually death is not the problem, but our attachment to that which is asat, false. That is the problem. So this is really lesson number one in spiritual life. There's this nice verse spoken by Narada Muni from the first canto, chapter 13, from Maharaj Yudhisthira. A very interesting verse. Narada Muni is saying that detachment is the essence of the process of knowledge. Let's hear. Yan manyase dhruvam lokam adhruvam vana chobhayam sarvata na hi sochaste snehat anyatra mohajat. O king, in all circumstances, whether you consider the soul to be an eternal principle, or the material body to be perishable, or everything to exist in the impersonal absolute truth, or everything to be an inexplicable combination of matter and spirit, feelings of separation are due only to illusory affection and nothing more. What does that mean? What Narada Muni is doing, he's making a quick overview of different kinds of philosophy, different kinds of understandings, different paths of knowledge. So there are those who accept the soul to be eternal, and there are those who understand that the material body is perishable. You see, even the materialistic people, if they're intelligent, they know that this body perishes. Or even you're an impersonalist. You think everything is impersonal, Raman. Or if you think somehow or other matter and spirit have come together, this is like the Sankhya philosophers. The Sankhya philosophers do not come to the conclusion of oneness. They come to a conclusion of two-ness. That there is Prakriti and Purusha, there is matter and there is spirit. And because the atheistic Sankhya philosophers, they don't accept God, So somehow the world has come about by a mysterious combination of this matter and spirit, these two ultimate principles. So Narada Muni is just saying, he's just looking quickly, there's the different possible paths of knowledge that you may have taken to, Maharaj Yudhisthira. But he's saying that in any case, there is one common conclusion. This is a very brilliant verse. Narada Muni is saying, even in philosophies that seem so opposite to one another, still there's one common lesson which is very important, which is valuable out of all of them. And that is, why lament? Why lament? We should not lament. Because lamentation is being born from illusory affection. See, even if one says there is only matter, alright, but it's the same lesson I just told you. Then this body is matter, it's bound to pass away, to crumble, so then you should not become attached to anything, because that's, if you're a materialist, then this is the nature of the world. Everything comes and goes. So don't be attached. And if you accept the eternal soul, the same lesson. Because the soul is eternal, nothing here will last, so that eternal soul should not become attached. If you're an impersonalist, everything is impersonal Brahman, then this manifestation is Maya, illusion. So don't become attached to the illusion. So in all of these cases, and also including the Vaishnava philosophy, there is at least this one common lesson to be learned. Don't be attached. So now this brings us to the principle of Yukta Vairagya, because Narada Muni, in his preaching, he's just referred to different kinds of philosophies, non-Krishna conscious philosophies, but he's extracted an important lesson from them. So this is the principle of Yukta Vairagya, engaging everything in Krishna's service. Anasaktasya Vishayan Yatarham Upayunjitam Yubandha Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya Uchate. And again, this Yukta Vairagya is coming to the conclusion of what? Renunciation, detachment. So in Krishna consciousness, one becomes detached by engaging whatever can be engaged in Krishna's service. You see? So, therefore, Narada Muni, he's even taking different doctrines which apparently oppose Krishna consciousness, and engaging them to show Maharaj Yudhisthira this very important basic principle of knowledge, which is this point, detachment. So, Krishna is the basis, the absolute eternal ground on which everything else rests. He says in the Gita, everything is held by me, like pearls are held together by a thread. So this background of the absolute truth is our ultimate shelter. And Krishna is the only rightful object of attachment, because he is the eternal background of everything. There's this nice verse, it's one of the prayers that we say to get forgiveness to the deity, forgiveness from the deity for any offenses that we may have committed. Bhumaus klati padanam bhumeva lamanam tvayajata paradanam tvameva sharanam prabhu. Very nice verse. That, so if you're walking along on the ground and you stumble, you start to totter in your tracks. So, by what can one regain one's balance? By the same ground on which I stumble. You see? You've tripped on something and you start to fall. So then you put your foot out and rest it on the same ground on which you tripped. And then you can keep your balance. So this verse is saying, similarly, when one commits offenses, what does that mean? We've stumbled in our service to the deity. We've made some mistake, done something wrong. So how do we correct ourselves? It is again only by taking shelter of the deity, the same deity. You see, if one commits offense against the Lord, it's not, this was one of the mistakes of one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers. He committed an offense against his spiritual master. His Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, had sent him to England to preach and sent him money collected in India to England for the building of a temple. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati desired that a Gaudiya Math temple be constructed in London. This was in the 1930s. But this godbrother instead spent that money just on his own maintenance. He didn't earn more money. He didn't earn money to maintain himself by his preaching. Instead, he spent that money for the temple on himself. So his Guru Maharaj was very displeased. And then when he heard that his Guru Maharaj was displeased, then he went somewhere. I think it might have been to the Himalayas, but he went somewhere and he began to perform austerities and was worshipping Lord Shiva to become free from this offense. But and this was what really displeased Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You see, if we commit an offense against Krishna, and we think, oh, so now that relationship is finished, I go somewhere else and rectify. That's completely wrong. Krishna is the only real shelter. Krishna is the absolute truth. Everything else is based upon Him. So you see, when we speak of becoming detached, what does it mean? It really means become attached to Krishna. You see, this is our problem. Attachment means to be attached to things other than Krishna. Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita, in Srimad Bhagavatam, that this is the cause of all fear. Yes, because one is thinking that there's something else, some alternative to Krishna, and then pursues that, desires to become attached to that, then one is placed in a condition of fearfulness, because Krishna is really the only shelter, the only truth, the only object of our loving propensity, the only real entity with whom we can have a relationship. And until we come back to this understanding, then we will always be in fear, we will always be in distress, we will always be in trouble. You see? So, in other words, if one commits an offense to Krishna, one can only rectify that offense by taking shelter of Krishna. And begging for His forgiveness, and placing oneself in Krishna's service with even more determination, taking a vow, now I will serve You without committing offense, doing whatever is necessary to rectify that offense in Krishna's service. This is the only means. And similarly, so the problem of attachment, the problem of fear of death, what is all that? That is being attached to something else than Krishna. Relating to something else than Krishna. Death, what does Krishna say? Mrtyu sava harascham, I am death. I am death. But we have to see that way. The Vedanta Sutra, in the Upanishads, there's this nice statement that the Supreme Lord, He eats everything. He's the eater. Atta is the term in the Upanishads. Atta, He's the eater of everything. And
when he eats everything, means the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, vaishyas, the shudras, everything, everybody. And then on this meal, he sprinkles death as the sauce. And then he's eating everything. So, the Lord is our only shelter. So, as we've heard Kapila Dev say, death should not be seen as something horrible. That is the, again, the view of one who is attached. And I've explained that's the basic attitude we see in so-called Western so-called civilization. That death is the greatest tragedy. Because it is a civilization of attachment to this world. And therefore, it is not really a civilization. Because attachment to this world is what? Ignorance. So it's simply some elaborate manifestation of ignorance. People become attached to the temporary forms of this world, and therefore they think death is horrible. You know. Again, death is just an examination of how well we have followed Krishna's instructions. Yes, we have come to this world also as a result of some kind of offense to Krishna. That's why we're here. But we're given the opportunity to rectify that offense in this life by taking complete shelter of Krishna again. Krishna is so kind to give us Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, to appear as the holy name, give us this wonderful Sankirtan movement. So if we follow Krishna's instructions nicely, then we'll be able to pass this examination of death, which is an examination of our attachments. You see? When death comes, if we view it as horrible, it is only because we have remained attached to things of this world. Srila Prabhupada said, for a devotee, death is like going to sleep, that's all. Going to sleep, and then one wakes up in the spiritual world. So, how is that horrible? Death is actually an opportunity for unlimited devotional service in the Satchitananda realm of Krishna's personal association. Death is glorious for the devotee. But if we have not given up these attachments, then we will consider it horrible. And it will be horrible, yes, because by that attachment we'll have to take birth here again. That's why Srila Prabhupada, I remember when I was a very new devotee, one of the first lectures I ever heard by Srila Prabhupada on tape, when I was a beginning devotee. And he was preaching to his disciples that please take up this Krishna consciousness seriously and become pure devotees so that when you leave this body you go back home, back to Godhead. So I am your spiritual master, I've initiated you. So I am bound to you that if you do not leave this material world at the end of this life, then I have to come back. I have to come back to rescue you. And the example is given of Biblamangala Thakur and his spiritual master from his previous life spoke through the mouth of a prostitute, Chintamani, to wake him out of his illusion. So Prabhupada is saying, I have to come back. And then Prabhupada said, please have mercy on me. So even Srila Prabhupada, he doesn't relish the idea of coming back here. Yeah, so that's if we fail the test. We have to come back here, and that's not so nice when the opportunity is there. Of course, the opportunity is there anyway to serve Krishna. But Krishna is calling us to come into his personal association in Goloka Vrindavan to serve him there. So we should respect that call and honor the wonderful opportunity that Krishna is giving us to become his pure servants in this one lifetime. Shaknodi hava yat shoham prak sharira vimokshana. Krishna says, just in this time you have in this body before it goes, you can become perfect. He says, sayukta, you can become perfectly linked to me in yoga. Again, by following Krishna's instructions. All right, I'll stop here. We will meet again tomorrow. Same time, same place. And talk further about death. Yes.
Question?
Yes.
Yeah, we've heard many times this famous statement that actually in one lifetime, this very lifetime, if we are serious enough, we can come back to Godhead. You're generally accepted, however, some devotees are afraid that maybe it is not like that. I have come across the statement of Srila Prabhupada in first part of third canto in one commentary, when he writes in purport that it is not possible to come back to Godhead in one lifetime. And I was astonished to read that, but I accepted that. And from Sachinandan Maharaj and later on from, I think, Sri Prabhupada, who I've heard that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has once told that actually it takes for sadhaka, usually for serious sadhaka, it takes three lifetimes. One to when he's chanting on Nama Aparat level, then on Nama Abhas and Sudhanam as the third lifetime. Could you please comment on that?
Well, Brahmandish Brahmadi Kaunse Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade by Bhakta Latra Beach. There is a statement in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that a living entity under illusion moves around this universe, the Wanda, taking birth after birth. But then when he becomes fortunate, Bhagyavan, then he meets a guru by Krishna's grace, and by Guru's grace, he meets Krishna, or Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai. And by this meeting with Guru and Krishna, Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of devotional service, is implanted in the heart. So, yes, a seed does take time to grow. Yeah? But when one has Guru, then we have to respect, because Prabhupada insisted on this, that the business can be finished in one lifetime. Now, the way to meeting Guru, that also may take many lifetimes. There is some devotional service, you see? Just like if one is laying in hospital, one's life has been full of just material activities, but suppose he's gotten sick and he's shut up in the hospital and he's fed intravenously some glucose, sugar, liquid through his vein. And while he's laying there with the tube in his arm, Ekadasi comes. Ekadasi, you're supposed to fast and not engage in any materialistic activity. So he's forced to stay in the hospital bed and he doesn't eat any grains that day. That is devotional service. You see, he's performed devotional service. He's made a great, great step in his spiritual life. But if that's all he does in this lifetime, then it's very likely that he will take birth again. So you have to look at it this way, when it says one generally does not become Krishna conscious in just one lifetime. You see, leading up to accepting a spiritual master, there can be, yes, life after life after life, a gradual, by this association, that agyata sukriti, you see,
And then one becomes promoted to the point where he can accept a spiritual master. We see in the preaching of ISKCON in this world, you see that there are people who are inclined to Krishna consciousness, but they're not ready to accept spiritual master. They just can't do it. They want to do some service on some level. I remember one temple where I was staying and preaching. One boy had become a devotee, and he had a friend. And he was always, you know, writing to this friend, calling him. And the friend was nice. The friend liked to do service. And then this friend, after some time, he had some real reverses in his life. Everything went wrong for him. So then his friend, who had become the devotee, said, "Now this is it. You see, he has no more material life. So we can, you know, I'll get him." He was like promising all the other prabhus, "I'm going to make him a devotee now." So then he went there and he was preaching to him. He brought him back to the temple. And this boy was there in the temple and serving, you see. And then, but gradually the boy started to realize what's happening, you know, what it really means. He's living in the temple and serving and realizing that, you know, he's looking at the end of his material life. It's now just coming up upon him. And I was staying at the temple, so I was giving a lot of classes there, and he liked my classes. So then he came to see me after a few days. He came in and sat down, and then he started to say, "When I think that from this point on there'll be no more," he gave different examples of what it meant, no more sense gratification, but, you know, no more going out and seeing the world and walking through the forest and speculating and watching television and doing this. "When I think," then he began to cry. He just began to cry. "I can't do it. I can't do it." He was just crying. And, you know, I felt so sorry for him. And so he left. He just couldn't do it. Although he was pious, and, you know, he was attracted to Krishna. He had no argument with the philosophy. And he wanted to be, you know, he had, his good friend was a devotee, and he wanted to be some way associated with a devotee, but he couldn't give up his involvement in sense gratification, which, you know, that's what you do when you accept spiritual master. You take vows to serve Krishna under vows. So we see there are so many people like that. So, yeah, and just to come to that point, they have taken many births. So that's true. But once one has accepted the spiritual master, then the strong, we should say, the opportunity is there. I would not agree that there is some mysterious rule that says this person, having been initiated by spiritual master, still he has to take 3 more births. I do not agree that there can be such a rule. Not if the spiritual master is bona fide. Because this is the statement of faith in the spiritual master, that one should see the order of Krishna and the order of spiritual master to be the same. So Krishna is saying, "Come back to me, serve me." Krishna is not telling, you don't see in Bhagavad Gita Krishna telling Arjuna, "Stay in the material world 3 more lifetimes, then come." He's not speaking like that. He's saying, "Come back now, do your service to me, and become purified. Go back home, sarva dharma prachita, mamekam sharanam braja." He's saying, "If you surrender to me completely, then I will deliver you." That's his promise. So this, we have to say that this opportunity is there. Opportunity is there when one accepts a spiritual master. Of course, will is also there, free will is there, choice is there. So one may not take full advantage by one's own choice and then may have to take birth again. Yes. But we should not think that there's some mysterious rule. Prabhupada never told us about such kind of rule. So And this is the problem. If one starts to factor such a thing into one's mind, well, it's not possible anyway. I'm not going to go back home, back to Godhead after this life. So since I'm not going back anyway, why should I be so serious about following the regular principles? You see, this is what we call loophole, you know, like in a contract. Someone writes a contract to try to, nail everything down, define everything, but in the language there is some way to get out, there's some way to cheat, you see. And sometimes it is said there are certain people who read the scriptures that way. Here you see, here's one Prabhu reading Bhagavad Gita very nicely, trying to learn what Krishna, and here's another person looking for loopholes. Yes, that's interesting. I see, I don't have to surrender completely. I go. This is not a very good attitude. And so then this, you know, this becomes this, you know, remaining in this material world for a few more births, it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy, you see? Because that's what you want, therefore, okay. But it doesn't have to be that way. We shouldn't think like that. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. So, again, come back tomorrow, please. And we'll continue. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Мы не сильно грабочки. Мы не контролируем микрофон.